Hello there and welcome to the official EFL podcast. Joining us on this episode is the Bolton boss, who's had an eventful week, travelling to Cambridge United only for their game to be abandoned. Ian Ebbett and his Wanderers wandered home after just 9 minutes of football. He's with us on the podcast for slightly longer today.
It was a strange one because through the day we hadn't seen any rain. Quite breezy and it was always forecast, but it was fine. The pitch was great. Even during the warm-up it was okay. And then all of a sudden we come out for kick-off and it was almost like the taps had been turned on. And within 4 or 5 minutes it was waterlogged and unable to continue, which was disappointing for us, but more so for the fans that travelled all that distance.
And throwing the Stowell in as my Sky Sports colleague David Stowell is back to co-host, and Millwall's Tom Bradshaw attempts the Everest-like challenge of our 72 in 72. If we're floating your boat, then press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the whole thing on YouTube every week. Intro done, let's pod. It's the official EFL podcast. Okay, welcome along to this latest edition of the official EFL podcast. Once again, my colleague from Sky Sports, David Stowell, is with us. Stowley, how are you?
I'm well. I hope you're well too. I always wonder when I come back on here how many people you phoned and they said no, so you phoned me back.
Come on. You know you are speed dial number 5 on mine. I won't tell you this before, Rob, but there you are, Rob. No,
you're
it's a pleasure to have you back, my friend. And lovely to see you again. Right, we've got a very special guest this week. He's had an eventful week, as has his team. There's been a lot of travel, but not much work done. Ian Ebbett, Bolton Wanderers boss, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. Nice to see you both.
It's a pleasure to see you, mate. So, during the course of the week, and as I say this, I'm looking out the window and the snow starts coming down, but earlier on in the week, it was the rain which put pay to your trip to Cambridge. Well, not the trip to Cambridge, but the actual game. Just talk us through it, mate. Abandoned after less than 10 minutes after that journey, after the preparation, after everybody getting pumped up and ready to go. What happens during the course of a game such as that?
Yeah, it was eventful, as you say. I think it was a strange one because through the day, we hadn't seen any rain. Quite breezy and it was always forecast, but it was fine. The pitch was great. Even during the warm-up it was okay, and then all of a sudden we come out for kickoff and it was almost like the taps had been turned on. And within 4 or 5 minutes it was waterlogged and unable to continue, which was disappointing for us, but more so for the fans that travelled all that distance.
You mentioned the fans. I mean, it is a trek from Bolton down to Cambridge. Andy Bebbington was on the internet talking about how he travelled 8,000 miles from China to go to the game. And then, obviously, there's context. He's a Bolton fan working over there. He teaches English. It is in the middle of a two-week trip home. He'd not come back specifically for that specific game. Stowell, it just goes to show, we go sometimes to games and they are in jeopardy of being called off, but it's fans who travel around the country, you end up seeing a bit of football, traveling all the way home. It's a commitment, isn't it, from the fans that we all love?
Yeah, and it makes the game, doesn't it, ultimately? And it's so frustrating when these kind of things happen. And so often you see teams, fans who have long trips and it happens. I remember a couple of seasons back, I think a game at Barrow was called off twice for Exeter fans who'd gone all the way up. And sometimes it happens, you know, the other direction as well, Carlisle fans or someone going all the way down. It's something that's really difficult. And obviously, as Ian says there, everything seemed fine. And then all of a sudden you get that deluge. And it's a real shame. But also, I suppose, from a manager's point of view, Ian, you, as Prutz was saying before, you get everybody pumped up and ready to go. That sort of the mental side of getting everybody to that sort of 100% mark when that whistle blows, and then it sort of all goes up in smoke.
Yeah, well, as you can see from the league table, we've already got 2 or 3 games in hand. We've been quite successful in the cup, so our schedule is manic from now to the end of the season as it stands. Anyway, we've got 18 games to go in less than 3 months. So it hasn't simplified things for us. It's probably made it more complex. So it is what it is. Look, fortunately for us, we've got the game back in the 3 week we had before the end of the season. So, 2 weeks' time, we're back down there again.
You mentioned the games in hand, and obviously if you take a look at the top end of League One, Pompey at the top, Derby second, yourselves in third with 2 games in hand on Derby, 3 games in hand on Portsmouth. Well, it's the old cliche, what do you prefer, the points on the board or the games in hand?
Well, I'll let you know after we've played them, bro. we've put ourselves in a really strong position. as it stands right now, we've got the highest PPG points per game. We've had a successful start to the season and put ourselves in a strong position to hopefully compete for promotion, which was our target at the start of the season. But we know, you know, it's going to be really tough. There's, as I said, there's 18 games to go, and in a short period of time, we're going to have to earn it.
I suppose, Ian, if people have not been following football for the last few years, they've been under a rock somewhere and have suddenly come out and see the league table now, they'd sort of say, well, Bolton should be challenging at the top of a table, I suppose, you know, big club and all the rest of it. But obviously so much has happened in the last few years, which has made the success that you've had so far this season, winning the EFL trophy last season as well, such a great achievement. Do you ever sort of get a chance to take a step back and think about how far the club has come since you walked through the door, and the work obviously that Sharon and people behind the scenes have done as well? Because it's quite remarkable, isn't it, from where you've come to where you are now and where you could go in the months ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do that, to be honest, David. It's difficult to stop and get a breather. I mean, it's quite topical at the moment with what's happening with Jürgen, the life of a manager and how stressful it can be, and how much sacrifice there is that comes with the job. But yeah, it's important that we try and give ourselves a minute to think about where we've come from on this journey. That from the bottom of League Two, the club was completely broken. We had no connection with the fan base. There was a huge disconnect. Even our own staff were, you know, having food banks, visiting food banks not so long ago. To now, you know, get promoted in my first season, stabilise, win the trophy last year, get to the playoffs, and now have another opportunity this season. It's been an incredible journey, but we do genuinely feel like we're just starting to begin to get to where we want to get to. There's been a lot of work behind the scenes on rebuilding the foundations to enable us to have sustained success. I mean, that's our aim, that's our goal. We want to get back to the Premier League, but to be able to do that and achieve that goal, it takes time, it takes a process, and we're partway along that journey as it stands right now.
I think it was so obvious, the focus, because we did several games for Sky where it almost felt like when it got to talking about the game and the players, you had to get through so much, didn't you, Ian? You had to go through what was going on off the field. You had to hear from yourself being asked about everything, nothing to do with the green thing with the 11 players running on it. It was literally, what does this mean? What does that mean? What do the ownership think? I mean, when you look back at playing football for as long as you did, for the managers that you did, and now being in the madhouse, as I like to call it. Do you ever miss being a player, the straightforward nature of being a player? And is being a manager in the time that you've done it all that you thought it was going to be?
The answer to the first question is no, I've never missed it. I enjoyed my career. I loved my career. But I much prefer this.
I think it's safe to say as well, with the greatest respect, you got everything out of yourself, didn't you? You absolutely maxed out at what you could possibly achieve as a footballer, which I suppose then when you do look back as an older man, you think, well, no, I gave it everything and I got my just reward. So you're happy with it. You're comfortable with it, aren't you?
100%. You know, I was fortunate enough to play in every division, be promoted out of every division, score in every division. So as you say, I got the most out of myself. That's for sure. Because I wasn't the most talented and I certainly wasn't a good athlete, and I certainly wouldn't recruit myself nowadays to play for my team. So it's that's
brutal honesty there.
Yeah. But I did okay. Look, I love my job now. Did I ever think it would be this difficult? No, but has it absolutely just changed me as a person? I have a huge passion for this. A huge passion, not just for managing people, but for coaching and the tactical detail as well. Constantly evolving, constantly learning. Have a clear identity and way of playing that, you know, people speak about plan B and plan C. We just want to be really good at plan A and get better at plan A. And I think we're doing that. I've used over 100 players in my almost 4 years here now, because we've had to have that churn to constantly evolve and improve, because the gaps between the tops of the divisions is getting bigger and bigger. And as I said, we're not in it to be mediocre, we're in it to compete. So hopefully once we get out of this league, whether it be this season or in the future, that we'll be ready to compete again in the Championship, because as I said, I'm not in this to be mediocre. I want to be the best, and that takes hard work and a lot of sacrifice.
So when did you realise you wanted to be a coach? Was it while you were playing or towards the end, or was it that caretaker spell at Chesterfield that sort of lit the fire?
Yeah, I mean, I was doing my badges before then, and then I was thrown into the last three games for an already relegated club. And yeah, that was the moment really when the switch went off, that this is what I want to do. And post that, there was a huge gamble taken from both sides. When I went to Barrow in the National League, they had seven or eight players, had some financial issues, had just survived on the last day in the National League. And I wanted to go in there and dominate the ball and become this possession-based team that everyone told me that couldn't have success in the National League. It made me want to do it more. And then from then, the kind of Barcelona thing was created, and we ended up getting promoted for the first time in 50 years. And that brought me on this journey to Bolton. And it was just an unbelievable opportunity to get a club of this size and stature at the bottom of League Two with actual no foundations and no strategy, no structure, and the ownership group to trust me to build it all the way that I envisioned it. And yeah, it's brilliant. I love it. And hopefully we get this club back to where I believe it belongs.
And obviously we've come off the back of the transfer window. I get the feeling that you're happy with the work that's been done for yourself and the football club.
Yeah, again, the huge thank you to the board and the commercial team and everyone else that has rebuilt the club to enable us to be able to purchase players again, because there was a stage where we were just beg, borrow and stealing from everybody. And now we're able to cherry pick our recruitment on our playing style and identity, and the board have backed us once again to go and strengthen the squad this January. Yeah, we're pleased. It makes it certainly difficult for me once everyone's available to pick 11 and 18, but you know, we'd rather do it from a position of strength than not. And I think we've done good business, and hopefully now that will give us enough to get us over the line.
Because as well, given what you've said there, with games being rearranged and cups coming to the fore, it's certainly going to be busy, isn't it? We look at it from a media point of view, and we class ourselves sometimes as being busy, in inverted commas. But it's every day you're in each other's pockets. It sounds as well, Ian, like you're talking about it in a way that you absolutely thrive off, because you are in at the deep end, surrounded by people that you've put together. You must absolutely revel in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the minute you stop reveling in it, it's the time to leave. I think that's how Jürgen feels right now. And I think I initially wanted to be part of the game for as long as the game would have me, if that makes sense. I no longer feel that way. This is not something that you can do forever, especially at this intensity. And if you want to do a good job, as I said, it takes huge sacrifice. And takes a huge toll on you and your personal life.
So when Jürgen said about being, correct me if I'm wrong, but he used the word tired, I think he did, because, and obviously you get a tranche of people going, well, you're a football manager, what's tiring about that? But when you're inside the building, I mean, you're the only one that answers the questions. You're fielding them from 360, aren't you? From everyone below you going, Gaffer, what's this? To everyone above you saying, well, what do you think about this? So it must take that level of energy to be able to compartmentalise, because also when you're a husband, a dad, a partner, etc., there's that whole other portion of your life which needs to maintain its attention as well. That must be pretty tough.
It is tough, and it's not just the interior noise with what you said, managing upwards and downwards. You've got the expectancy of the crowd, the fan base, especially at that club, you know, Liverpool. We've got it here in League One because of where we've been in the past. There's the media, there's the press and stress, and yeah, it's tough. But as I said, I love it. I do like the idea of having a break and having a bit of a sabbatical, and not just to have some normal life and normality in my life, but to improve myself again. It's hard to keep improving yourself while you're in post and in job. But I'd like to do that on my terms rather than it being getting the sack and then an enforced rest. But yeah, look, as I said, I love it. I love what we've built here. Yes, it's high pressure. Yes, it's going to be a busy couple of months, but we wouldn't want it any other way. It means we've been successful, and we should embrace that pressure and be thankful for it, really.
with all that pressure and stress in mind, Ian, what's it like standing at Wembley as manager of a team up against another very good team for your level and leading by 4-0 and looking around and thinking, we've got this.
Completed
it. It's, you know, you've got promotion in your career, in your management career as well. Silverware is obviously one thing that fans really crave, and that must have been a really special day to just think, wow, you know, Wembley, done.
100%. I think, you know, it was amazing that day because I was able to enjoy it because the players made it relatively comfortable for me. So I was just able to sit back and take it all in and not really have the stress and pressure. But for me, that day was just about the football club returning to a place of old type, you know, that kind of thing. We, from where we've come from to then have that day with almost a full house and win in that manner was just a brilliant reminder for everybody that, you know, we're on the way back and we are doing really good work behind the scenes and this club is going to get to where we believe it belongs again. It was a wonderful day and hopefully this season we can have another wonderful day for our fans and our support because they've been through an awful lot and it's great to give them some joy and happiness.
Because I must admit, I was commentating that day and I was prepped. I mean, obviously as a commentator, you're prepped for everything really, or as much as you can be prepped for. But I was almost sort of expecting extra time penalties. You know, I thought it would be very, very tight, but you just came out of the trap so fast.
Yeah, the players are capable of that. And I think that day just suited us, the type of stadium it is, the pitch, the way we just put it all together on that day. And when we do put it all together, I mean, we're capable of really good results. I think we're becoming more consistent with those types of performances this season. And that's why we're at the top end of the league. But, you know, we speak to the players a lot about, you know, topical things nowadays for footballers is, you know, material things like, you know, cars and nice clothes and everything else. But for me, what motivates me is legacy. And in 30, 40, 50 years' time, when all those material things mean nothing anymore, that it's written in the books, you can speak to your grandchildren, you can speak to friends and family about the experience of that day, show them the medals. You know, it's those types of things that really motivate me, not material things. And that's the way I try and educate the players is to try and create history and legacy rather than worry about the everyday things of, you know, what finances can bring.
The irony being, Ian, that Stowley only bothers about crazy clothes, which is bizarre. I was at Wembley the same day as well, not working. I was in the posh seats, which was lovely, which I never get let into. It's probably the first and last time. And again, it is one of those strange games where you look at it and go, I'd have killed to be in a game like that. I was normally on the other end thinking 4-0 down. We can't get anything here. Win the second half and all that type of rubbish. You just think it's a struggle. Northampton at the weekend. What's your thoughts on that? Because obviously, as you say, it's the next game comes around. It's a chance to put all of that pent-up energy into practice from what happened during the course of the week.
Exactly. Look, it's another challenging, difficult game. I think this is what League One brings. There's so many different types of game and so many different types of opponent. We'll prepare as best we can, even though it is snowing pretty heavily here at the moment.
Maybe for yourself place, now, you might have half a chance again. Yeah.
This place seems to get four seasons in one day, so it's snowing pretty heavily at the moment. So fingers crossed we can get out there and do some good work on the grass. And you know, that's been limited with the Saturday, Tuesday games, so it's great for us to be able to get all the players out together on the grass and work on our ideology and our identity.
Well, Ever, it's been such a pleasure, mate, and having covered your games from afar, and I'm sure we butted heads at some stage, not literally on a football pitch, because I'd have been running very scared away from you dominating the back four. But it's just lovely to see, mate, former opponents and colleagues and teammates that go into it, I've got so much respect for you because it is giving back to the game. Yes, you want to be successful. Yes, it helps your family and your close circle of people, and it's good. It's good for yourself, but it's giving back to the game that's given you so much. And myself and Stowley, we just wish you all the very best.
Thank you, appreciate it, and thanks for your support and your kind words. Hopefully, see you guys soon.
Very much, mate. Looking forward to that. And the tactics board behind you, if you're watching on YouTube, don't worry, that's not giving anything away for the weekend. If anything, it's a reverse Christmas tree, which, as we know, February you can't use anymore.
Exactly.
Ian, top stuff. Stowley, we're going to get some more from you off the back of this, which is our 72 in 72. And this week, it's Millwall's Tom Bradshaw.
Hi, I'm Tom Bradshaw, and this is the EFL 72 in 72. Leicester, Ipswich, Leeds, Southampton, Hull, Millwall, Sheffield Wednesday, Bristol City, Watford, Cardiff, Norwich, can't remember the big one, Bolton, Portsmouth, Oxford, Cheltenham, Charlton, Shrewsbury, Warsaw, AFC Wimbledon, Wrexham, Forest Green, Birmingham, Plymouth, Carlisle, Leighton Orient, Newport County, Cambridge United. West Brom.
Time.
I'm so careful.
The 72 in 72, not as easy as it sounds. Tom Bradshaw, though, with a very healthy 28, which puts him seventh. Matt Smith, still away ahead in the lead with 38. Richie Wellins, Danny Carley, Pete Wild, Wayne Rooney, Ebo Adams, Tom Bradshaw, John Coleman, Mark Albrighton, and making up the top 10, Joe Bryan. It's a pleasure talking to Ian Everett. We'll mention Bolton a little more in just a second. But first, let's bounce into the championship. And let's bounce around the championship, Stowley. There's no rhyme nor reason to the way I'm going to go about this. But so what?
Big win. Habit of a lifetime.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Who needs producing? I'll never catch up. Big win, big statement win in a Yorkshire derby last weekend with Huddersfield beating Sheffield Wednesday 4-0. Great work being done by John Worthington. All cards on the table. John is someone that I know from in and around the neck of the woods where I live because he runs a soccer school, which my son goes to. And having chatted to him a few times, I saw him in the run-up to last week. And in the middle of putting together the syllabus for the youth element of Huddersfield Town, in the middle of an audit, he gets a phone call saying, oh, by the way, you've got to take the team at the weekend. And to all intents and purposes, he's aced both. He's done very well from what I hear with preparing that side of what Huddersfield Town is moving forward, which bodes well for the future. But if you're going to take points off someone that's a couple of points and places away from you, 4-0 at home is one way to do it, isn't it?
It is, and the beauty of our three divisions here at the moment is that in the various relegation and promotion battles that we've got, there are so many teams involved in them that it means we're going to get a lot of games like this, the cliched six-pointers, where not only do you not want to lose, but you want to win because it makes a massive difference to the table. And obviously Huddersfield here, you know, just after an hour, it was 0-0, and you were thinking, well, neither side gaining a lot here, but they won't want to lose it. You know, risk and reward. Do you go forward and try and get the 3 points, but risk the fact that you might get none?
Yeah.
4 goals in 12 minutes, and Huddersfield Town bagged the points comfortably in the end, albeit there were positive moments for Sheffield Wednesday along the way. And obviously, in recent weeks, there have been a lot of positive times for Sheffield Wednesday. But a huge win for them in the position they're in. It's taking them, you know, 3 points above the bottom three with Queen's Park Rangers and Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham down there. And the next 5 games interest me for Huddersfield because they go to Southampton next, which will be nice and easy, I'm sure. Then they host Sunderland, then they host Hull, then they go to Watford, and then it's Leeds at home.
Wow.
So, you know, 5 games time, it'll be interesting to see whether they are below that line again or whether actually they've made big strides away. Very tough matches, though. And then a mixed bag for the rest of the season, and Ipswich away on the final day. So,
busy.
Interesting fixtures ahead.
The other side of that equation, of course, Sheffield Wednesday need to react. They play on Friday against Birmingham, known as a Clinton Morrison derby, only in Clinton Morrison's house, I hear. A wonderful colleague, a bouncy presence, it's fair to say, at Sky Sports for us, Stowley. I mean, you look at the impact that Tony had when he went in at Birmingham. You look at, obviously, the good work broadly being done by Danny Rowe, but Wednesday's still in trouble. Birmingham's still not completely out of trouble. Is that safe to say for both sides?
Absolutely, very definitely. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday haven't won in six games now in all competitions. They've lost four of those. Now, it's very easy when a manager comes in and there's an upturn in form for everyone to be very positive. And so they should be for the form that they had. But now you start looking at it again and say, right, something needs to change again here in terms of results for Sheffield Wednesday to be on the up again. 8 points adrift of safety as it stands now. And Birmingham City are only 4 points above the drop zone, above the dotted line. So for Birmingham themselves, they don't want to lose this one and get really drawn in. And they want to keep Sheffield Wednesday well and truly down there, because then in their mind, if Birmingham could get a win, that would put them, well, it would put them 12 points clear of Sheffield Wednesday. Mm. And 12 points clear with, what, 15 games to go or so, you should then be saying, right, well, that's one team who we shouldn't have to worry about. So that's probably the carrot. That's probably what Tony Mowbray will be mentioning to his players, maybe to sort of say, let's keep them down there. And that's one step further up the ladder for us in terms of escaping from the relegation zone.
Let's jump further up the league with eyes very firmly on the playoff places. Hull City and another former colleague of ours, Liam Rossignol, a statement window. I mean, there's a lot of chatter in East Yorkshire about it being one of their best ever windows and squads put together. I mean, you've got to temper that and look at the teams that have actually got into the Premier League. This team hasn't done anything yet at all. But as we know that football isn't played on paper, my word, on paper, they look pretty special going forward, don't they?
Yeah, well, the front four in their game the other day, Ozan Tufan playing centre-forward, and behind him, Zorori, Carvalho and Philogene. I mean, that's not a bad front four, is it, by the way? Billy Sharp waiting in the wings. And just behind that, Tyler Morton, who's been terrific. And Ryan Giles, of course, one of those who came in, another one who jumps off the page on that Hull City side. And by the way, the other five in the team aren't bad. I'm just sort of picking out a few names there. So yeah, a very good squad. But it's they're very much a part of that congested picture below the Leicester City, Southampton, Leeds, Ipswich fight in those top four spots. You've then got West Brom, Hull, Coventry, Sunderland, Norwich and Preston. All those six teams split by 6 points. And it's interesting to note who've got games in hand in that top 10. Southampton, Ipswich, West Brom and Hull. So those teams have got to try and really make the most of that game in hand to reinforce their status in those positions. But yeah, I mean, on paper, terrific. And it's always a case now, isn't it? Windows shut, who can stay fit and therefore who can either rise up the table or stay where they are, because injuries will affect some teams. We'll talk about one team in particular, I think, in League One shortly. But yeah, that's what it's all about now. Great to have these terrific players, but they've got to play. And if that Hull City front four, five with Billy Sharp coming in can stay fit, then yeah, what a team.
Slight addendum with regards to moving around the league. Blackburn Rovers looking a bit sticky at the moment. I mean, it doesn't, from the outside looking in, doesn't all seem like everything's rosy. Consternation once again with regards to how the transfer window ended and business done for them, a team that's kind of perennially in the last few seasons been one of those that has been in that chasing pack for the top six, looks to be in a position where is transition the word? Do we know where this team and club is headed?
Well, transition is a word, but another word that comes into
it's
the vocabulary
is definitely a word.
It is a word. But I mean, another word with shun on the end, which is a worry, is relegation, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in the mix now, 5 points clear of the drop as it stands. And yeah, it's clear that all is not well because of, as you say, transfer dealings that have come and gone and either worked or not worked. And you count Lewis O'Brien into the previous January window, of course, one that didn't get over the line. I was fascinated by the fact that Lewis Travis left and went to Ipswich, because I think it's a great move for him, because obviously Ipswich are well and truly on the up, and it helps share that workload in midfield with Sam Morsy and the like in the centre of the park. But obviously that's a negative from Blackburn in terms of his ability. We don't necessarily always know what's going on behind the scenes, but that was a strange one. The no press conference before the game the other day, it's a worry. But particularly, as you say, they're used to competing at the other end of the table, not quite getting over the line into the playoffs perhaps, but being up there. Now they're at the other end, and it's how the squad react, the fans react, the management and those above Yundale Thomason react, and obviously losing Adam Wharton as well in going to Crystal Palace is a big blow on the personnel front, albeit great financially. So, yeah, keep an eye on Blackburn Rovers, I would say.
Let's hurtle back towards the top. Leicester, 11 clear of second, 12 clear of third. So it's Leicester, Southampton flying, Leeds on the march. Ipswich Town, fourth. Given what they've done so far, it's been a tremendous season. I said that with no condescension whatsoever. They are competing, very much competing, with three former Premier League teams, themselves, of course, being a League One side last season. A massive game for them on Saturday against West Brom. But they've done a bit of work in the window, Stowley, and I think they've brought someone in that I believe you to be one of your signings of the Championship window.
Yeah, we were talking about the deadline day, weren't we? Because the last podcast was just before the deadline day, and a lot happened in the EFL on deadline day. So I kind of was looking at signings in each division and trying to work out not necessarily who was the best player or the headline player, but a player who would make perhaps the biggest difference or strengthen a side the most in that division, a player that was needed by that team. And I think Ipswich's loan move for Kiefer Moore is brilliant work from Kieran, because just looking at their options up front, they've had a few injuries up front. So bringing a body in was important, but also someone who was good in the Championship, good at that level. Obviously, Kiefer's proved that in the past. But also the type of player he is, the way he can occupy centre halves and bring in someone like Connor Chaplin, who is obviously one of the jewels in the Ipswich crown. He's been terrific all season. Kiefer, you know, the way he plays, the physicality, the mentality as well, the experience that he brings, and the fact that he can create a bit more space for Chaplin in behind, I think could be a great reason why they can keep on going at Ipswich Town, particularly as well when you look at fixtures. You mentioned West Brom next. After that, and with the greatest respect to the teams who come next, sort of February and March is very winnable for Ipswich Town on paper, judging by the season gone by. Obviously, there'll be tough tests in there. But April is where things could go horribly wrong or very right. They play Southampton, Norwich, Watford, Middlesbrough, Coventry and Hull all in April. So win all of those, job done. Lose them all, obviously big problems. So they'll want to make up as many points as they can in March, knowing that April could be tough. But then if April's great for them, then they could well be over the line. So I mean,
happy day.
You know, it's fascinating to look ahead. But I think Kiefer Moore's brilliant. Max Bird, obviously, another one going to Bristol City, loaning back to Derby. Connor Roberts to Leeds, Anna Saruri as well to Hull, and Alex Pritchard, a few signings that jump out. But Kiefer Moore, for me, could be a big one.
And just to round off the Championship, a big shout out to those Plymouth Argyle fans that will be doing the 800-mile round trip up to Sunderland at the weekend. Weather permitting, and weather permitting was the undercurrent to what we were talking about with Ian Everett earlier on. His side will be chomping at the bit. And of course, given where they find themselves in third place, as we were speaking to Ian, with games in hand on both Derby and Pompey. Pompey at the top, 63 points. Derby second with 59. Bolton 58. Peterborough, as we know, can be free scoring behind them. Barnsley and Stevenage. That's a manager. I mean, it was such a lovely chat to talk to him. He's such a big bear of a man that can look very, very frightening. But once you talk to him, you think, oh, lovely. Yes, you are that type of fella. Speaking of managers, Nathan Jones is back. Now he's back. Is he back in a place that surprises you? And is it a major coup for the club involved?
This is really interesting for me. I think it's a remarkable story because a year ago, if you'd said to Charlton Athletic fans, your team will be struggling in League One, and you'll appoint Nathan Jones, I think they'd have been quite shocked, because obviously he was on the way to Southampton just leaving Southampton, you know, as a Premier League manager, and now dropping down to League One. And Charlton are a side now, haven't won since the end of November. Today we're heading towards mid-February. You know, I mean, that's a long old time. 14 games in all competitions without a win. So they needed a boost on the pitch, of course, but also off it, I think, to get themselves out of this. And I think if you're a Luton Town, Freudian slip, Charlton Athletic player...
He'll be back there in a minute. As he tends to do.
You look at him coming in and you think, right, we've got a guy here who knows what it takes to get out of this division, to be successful. And he's made a big thing about the fact that he was approached previously by Charlton. He said he wasn't ready to get back into management at that point. He's had a year out of the game. He's been paddleboarding. He's been spending time with his kids. He says he's been a proper dad for the first time in a while. And I think we can all relate to that in certain ways, because the job that we do is brilliant, but it takes you all over the country and at odd times and things. So football can mean that not only are you working hard in the game, but you don't get the family time. So he's obviously made the most of the year or so that he had off. I think they spoke to him in September. They ended up calling Michael Appleton, who of course came in. Mm-hmm. And Nathan said he had Championship, League One and European opportunities, but decided that this was the right fit. So good luck to him. And a big game for them up first, Reading away, with Reading obviously in the position they're in the table.
And just a little nod to Nath, if you're listening. I mean, just another one we've got on a job at Sky Sports style. I mean, Liam's gone in, Keith Andrews has gone in. I mean, you're welcome, gang, you're welcome. And if you are in between jobs as a manager, give us a bell, come and sit on the sofa. We'll show people what you can do. You talk about where Charlton find themselves in that intriguing League One relegation struggle with different dynamics at play. Teams that have hit a bit of form, teams that were in form and have stagnated a little bit. Another new manager cutting his teeth, Charlie Adam clicking into gear. And unfortunately, a club as big as Port Vale dropping into the drop zone.
Yeah, it's a really interesting picture, this, down here, because if you work from the bottom of the table up, Carlisle have lost five in a row, six defeats in seven, one win in 13, and a bottom of the table. Cheltenham, three straight defeats. They've lost four of the last five and just one win in six. And there was real positivity under Darryl Clark in recent times, but obviously that's sort of abated a little bit. If you skip over Fleetwood for a second, because they're having a positive turn, Port Vale, five losses in eight, no win in five, and they've just sacked their manager. And Carol Shanahan releasing a lengthy open letter to Port Vale fans yesterday was an interesting read. But then the positive signs, Fleetwood, back-to-back wins under Charlie Adam, starting to move up the table, maybe starting to work something there. Reading unbeaten in four, having lost players in January as well, so they're starting to move. And their next few games, they basically play everybody down there: Charlton, Fleetwood, Port Vale, Shrewsbury and Carlisle. So they're going to have a big say in proceedings at the bottom. And then a bit further up, Wigan and Exeter, who play each other in the northwest at the weekend, have both turned around their form. Exeter won five of the last 10, including three of the last four. They had, before that, I think, lost 12 of the previous 16 in all competitions. Gary Caldwell under massive pressure, but has got some good signings in January that have steadied the ship. And those two sides are on the up, so it'll be interesting to see if we get a winner between them at the weekend.
Speaking of signings, who stood out in League One for you?
I think as a team, Portsmouth did some great business, although they've been unlucky already. I mean, the injury curse at Portsmouth this season has been frightening. And if they do get up, then I think John Mussino will have a big sigh of relief and think that was a bit of a nightmare season, but we've got the job done and now we've rebuild again. They brought in Owen Moxon from Carlisle, who was great in the playoffs and in the season in general for Carlisle last season and carried it on this season. Callum Lang from Wigan, who's a player with a lot of admirers at this level. Miles Pert Harris from Brentford. And then Tom McIntyre from Reading, who was sent off on his debut. The card has since been rescinded, but he's actually fractured his ankle in making tackle. So his season is over, and they've also lost Terry Devlin and Joe Morrell through season-ending injuries. Yeah. So they've had a nightmare in terms of bumps and bruises down at Fratton Park, but they're still there. And, they're just sort of, the games are ticking on and they're keeping the points going, 4 points clear at the top. And yeah, it could be a momentous season for them to get over the line and in the circumstances that they've had to deal with as well.
Tough times there, and having spoken to John on here, I mean, he's the level-headed manager that can lead them through it. Top of League Two, Stockport, flying, Mansfield Town, Barrow. Should we stop calling them Little Barrow? Because they're not. We spoke to Ian, he enjoyed his time there. In the grand scheme of what football clubs have been, particularly in that part of the country, in English history, it's not as big as others, but my word, Wrexham just below them, Crewe, MK Dons, Notts County, they are keeping some very good company and beating some very good company as well, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And if you're not taking them seriously by now, you should be. That's the key with them, isn't it? Because they're not going away at the moment. We talk about Ipswich Town in the Championship, and we've got Barrow in League Two who are in a similar situation. And yeah, I think looking at the top sort of 11 of the table in League Two, in their last games, most of the others have stuttered a bit. Whereas Mansfield Town and Barrow have won their last two, or won their last game rather, and they beat people around them crucially. So Mansfield beat Notts County, Barrow beat MK Dons, And it's those kind of games we were talking about earlier on that they can propel you up the table or keep you there. And in terms of Barrow, they're not going away. They're now above Wrexham, albeit Wrexham have a couple of games in hand, but they're getting the all-important results. And it was good to see Cole Stockton on the score sheet for them.
Yeah.
First goal for them. He's had a bit of a stop-start season at Burton. Last season wasn't great for him at Morecambe compared to the season before when he was fantastic, as were the Shrimps. So might be something that sort of kick-starts him as well.
Forest Green get their first look at the new boss, Steve Cotchell. Just the 3 all away draw against Colchester United in his first game. 7 from safety. It looks perilous. But again, I still think with that man at the helm, having spoken to him, the relentless positivity, not lost positivity, but he's only gone in to realistically think that they can do it. And can they?
I think it's going to be tough, but he'll be under no illusions, will he? He's been there, seen it, done it before. And first thing to say is it's great to see him back.
Yes.
Having had the illness that he had when he was at the Shrewsbury helm. And good luck to him. Whatever happens from here on in the season, great to have him back in the dugout and back in the football world. Tough games ahead for them. They're at play Mansfield and Barrow in their next two. And they end the month against Wrexham. So when you look at that, it's not a great start on paper. But obviously, like we've said before, if you go and get some results against these teams, they're bonus points, really, you could say. And then you play the teams around you and try and make a difference. But it is at the moment, it is a bleak picture down there for them and indeed for Sutton as well.
Yeah.
But then Doncaster aren't really getting going. Colchester haven't picked up a lot of results back-to-back recently, and Grimsby are there as well. So, yeah, they just need to try and get a platform to build from, really.
To round out your David Stowell signing special from the deadline day off the back of the window, there's a better way of saying that. To round off David Stowell's signing masterclass, who in League Two stands out for you, Stowley?
Well, the first thing I must say is I forgot to mention Harry Vaughan in League One. Hull City to Bristol Rovers. Yeah. He was my actual signing. And I think he's terrific. Only 19 years of age, and I think he's going to be a quality operator. In League Two, the transfer that intrigues me is Harry McGurdy, Hibs to Swindon. Mm-hmm. He's obviously been brilliant at Swindon before. It didn't quite work for him at Hibs, but he's not an individual to everyone's taste, let's say.
well,
there are many sides to his character. And if they can get the Harry McGurdy that we've seen before in the EFL, then it'd be quite something to watch in League Two. He still remains the only player I've ever commentated on who was booked as they were stretched off. so I don't know if there'll ever be anyone else. We'll see. But he is put the ball at his feet and he can make magic happen. So yeah, it intrigues me, that one, because I wonder if it'll all click back together again like it has done in the past.
Well, a man that is to everybody's taste, and I'm sure you'd all agree with me, is David Stowell. Stowley, wonderful stuff as ever, my friend. I hope you've got a busy weekend, and if you have, wrap up, because my word, it's coming down out there. And that's enough for the weather report on this week's officially EFL podcast. Good to see you, mate.
Likewise.
So that's us done for another week. It's a big thank you to Bolton boss Ian Everett, Sky Sports' David Stowell, and Tom Bradshaw, who took the infamous 72 in 72. Please do give us a follow wherever you get your podcast from, or you can watch it all on YouTube. My name's David Prutton, and hopefully I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.